Hello, my lovelies. Thank you for joining me tonight. This is Paisley Wild, and we are off adventuring into the spaces between. We are being broadcast live on Truth Frequency Radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and TalkStream Live. Now, if you are listening later on YouTube, make sure you do hit that like and subscribe button. Also, you can check us out on the podcast. We can be found in iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and quite a few others. Just check wherever you get your podcast from for The Spaces Between with Paisley Wild. Now, no matter how you are hearing me, please do say hello. And again, I just want to thank you for joining me here on my spiritual journey, and I hope that you'll want to continue learning with me. Now, should you decide you want to support the show in another fashion, I do have an Etsy store, and I am adding more products. So there will be a link to the Etsy store in the show notes, or you can find it at etsy.com/shop/ Monarch Mountain Studio, and Mountain is MTN. So, also, our call line is open tonight, so if you want to share your thoughts or opinions, please give me a call at 213-233-3998, or if you're overseas and in the UK, try 44203-393-2871. All right, so here a while back, I posted on the YouTube channel just a commentary about emotions and intent and people asking for binding spells or curses or hexes. And I had just seen quite a few of them in the space of about 2 hours on the various social media pages that I follow. And it kind of struck a note with me just a bit. And so I kind of spouted off in a 15-minute a soapbox session. And basically I was saying, you know, in the heat of the moment, it's probably not best to do a lot of those spell casting or magic or ritual type activities. Because when you're really, really angry or worked up, often the magic can get away from you. And you can have some unintended consequences. And a friend of mine pointed out that, well, you know, emotion and magic are pretty closely linked. Because if you're going to do a spell of some sort, you generally have a reason for it. It's not just because. And a lot of times that reason has some sort of emotion or emotional connection to it. So I figured I'd do some research and kind of see what is out there. Because you see, there is a lot of information or misinformation online when it comes to your emotions and casting a spell. And I was really surprised that there wasn't more information. And I was also very surprised that so much of the information related to various games, role-playing games like Magic the Gathering and World of Warcraft and other spaces like that, or in the Harry Potter verse. And there wasn't really a lot of information that was real. And so I did have a fair amount of research. It's taken me all week to find the little bit of information that I did. And I ordered a new book just for me that we'll talk about after I get through it. I want to do a book review. And I had to pare down some of the information and try to find the real to it. It was a little surprisingly difficult because there just is not a lot of specific information regarding how your emotions do impact your magic. Because magic is definitely related to the emotions that you have and why you choose to do a specific ritual or spell or casting. And the amount of emotion that you might have in regards to that particular ritual or spell will absolutely impact your casting. So intense energy or emotion can either add a controlled fuel for a controlled spell to your casting, or it could cause it to be unstable and the results are not going to be necessarily what you desire. So first off, when it comes to emotions in general, and you're approaching a spell or ritual or anything like that, you want to focus your intention. Again, I'm talking about intention because it's very, very important. You should probably meditate a bit. And I want you to take some time and sit down with yourself and really get a clear thought on what it is that you want, what you want to accomplish, and some of the potential ramifications. I'll talk about that again, I think, later. And you just need to get clear on what you really, really, really want. And it helps to dig deeper to see if there's some sort of underlying insecurity or perhaps misconception on your part before you try to do a casting when there's a lot of energy involved. So, you know, what emotions might you feel in regard to your casting? Now, you can feel any of them. I'm only talking about a couple of them. Right off the bat, passion will absolutely spike your energy right off the meter, whether that passion comes from lust or anger or fear or excitement. And high emotion of all kinds can fuel your magical energy just like a stoked furnace. Love is generally considered a positive energy when it comes to magic. However, it depends on your intent. What is it that you're trying to accomplish that you're using your love as the energy source? Are you using that source or that energy to protect someone or to control someone? And often, out of the kindness of our hearts or our desire to do right, we want to help others to make better decisions according to our viewpoint. And so we might infuse a spell or a casting or a binding with our love. And we often, in our desire to help someone, we forget that what may be the right decision for ourselves is very likely not the right decision for another person. And so if you're going to power your spell with love in order to control another, it really is no longer a positive energy or a white energy. Instead, it becomes a very negative and dark, dark energy. My first major working was a charm bag, if you will, for my son, who he felt he'd been cursed. And I got to tell you, there was some real evidence that he may have experienced that. And so I did it for my mother's love in a form of protection. So just like in Harry Potter, the mother's love protects him from the big curse. You know, there's some truth to that. J.K. Rowling actually did some research before she wrote those books. Oh, there's a lot of fiction in there, but there are some kernels of truth, and this is one of them. So a parent's love or grandparents' love of a child is going to be very protective. So but be cautious in that because we learn from our mistakes. So you cannot protect someone from making mistakes at all because then they won't learn. They won't grow. Fear is a very closely related to anger. And it's often said that anger is a combination of fear and frustration or hurt even in disguise. And fear and worry are really an antithesis to your faith. And they really mean that you just don't trust the process. You may not trust your God or goddess or guides to have your best interests in mind. So just be aware that fear may be coming from within and may not be caused by something else. Fear can even mean that you reject your destiny or your potential future. Now, fear is definitely a normal reaction to several situations, but it's not a really healthy place to live for any length of time. So, you need to make sure you're breathing through it and you know, be aware of what causes you a fear that so that you can work through it because that outcome could be very positive and helpful. Now, fear can be useful if it curtails reckless behavior or dangerous situations, and it can cause incredible and surprising acts of strength and accomplishment. So fear is not always a negative emotion. Sometimes it's very positive, especially when it's motivating us to take positive actions to protect ourselves and for safety. And it can literally be a lifesaver. Fear of drowning is why people have life jackets when they go out on the boat. Because, who wants to drown? That'd be horrible. So yeah, that's why that fear, though, is giving you a life-saving device to keep you from being harmed. Now, when it does take you into a downward spiral, though, into depression and rejection of any potential necessary changes of yourself, it can be very, very debilitating. That's where a lot of your phobias come into play. And performing magic from this position of fear can really actually work in the same way. So for an example, if you're walking at night in a potentially dangerous area and we put up protective shields around us or around yourself, you're using precautions and you're ensuring your safety by using the fear. However, if you work magic to try to save or protect a relationship that is dangerous or abusive because you fear of being alone or of the unknown or how to be without that significant other, you're actually hindering yourself and you're harming yourself. And we don't want that. Now, then another energy to talk about would be sadness. Anyone who's ever lost someone, whether it's a relative, a friend, a guide, a pet, anyone, you know how much that pain of sadness is, how strong it is, and just how much energy can be found in grief. And often when we are sad, we want those things that are causing the sadness to go away and to be resolved. That kind of goes back to that dysfunctional relationship. For it to split apart, you may have sadness and you want to retain that relationship. Even if it is abusive, it's the devil, you know. It's not a healthy place to be. Or if you're trying to wish someone back to life that's passed, well, you're not just preventing yourself from moving on and healing from that loss, you're also potentially preventing them from moving on to the next stage or the next phase in their process. And that's not such a great thing either. So, you know, just be aware of how you're using sadness to fuel your spells. Anger is a very, very strong emotion and closely related to love, actually. So, now, anger can be a very, very, very good tool when it comes to magical workings, but it depends upon how you're using it. Because anger in and of itself is just an emotion. It's not negative and it's not positive. It just is. It's your expression of anger that can be negative or positive. So depending on what you're doing with it, that's really going to impact, is it a negative emotion or is it a positive emotion? Because I know when I get quite upset about something not being clean or something not being done quite right, either at work or at home, yeah, in that fit of anger, I might have an extra burst of energy and just get something done because I just want it done. That's potentially a good thing, but at the same time, it could be preventing someone else from learning or doing the process themselves. Or if you lash out in anger, there's a lot of fights that happen because of anger, and punching someone, not a good thing. So just keep in mind that anger is a neutral emotion. It's how you use it that's potentially good or bad. Now, frustration is very closely related to anger because that which frustrates us, well, it really drives you nuts. Now, are you frustrated because someone's not doing their chores at home, or is there a coworker that just isn't doing their share at work? If you try to do a spell or a working that means them to do more or to pick up their share, are you harming them to better yourself? You know, and I get it though, because just like the proverb, you know, the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, that one more thing that just drives you just insane. Are you lashing out in anger, in negative anger? And have you really considered the consequences of using that frustration to cast a spell in the heat of the moment? So, again, some of those emotions are good. Some of them are bad. But most of them are pretty neutral. It's how you use them in your castings. And just going back to that, have you planned it out? You know, do you understand the potential ramifications, the consequences? Now, if you're using your magical energy to create a positive outcome for yourself or for others, then generally that's considered a pure intention, and just moving forward with confidence is going to be okay. Now, if you're using that same energy, though, to get revenge on someone else, it may not be the right time to have a ritual. Also, keep in mind that hormone shifts can play just merry havoc with our emotions and cause us to have very unbalanced reactions to situations. That goes for both guys and gals. Sorry, guys, not just the ladies have hormones. And also, things like fatigue or illness or intoxication can also, you know, compromise our judgment. And also, if you didn't realize it, weaken your magical energy at the same time. So ideally, if you're going to go into a magical working, you want a level head and a spirit that is full of a strong intention that's fueled by positive emotion. I'll get to the flip side of that in a minute. Now, that positive emotion does generally take the form of faith and magical confidence. May not successfully root until you've got a history of good results, of course, from your magical workings, but you still want it. And you may want to talk to a magical peer that you respect to get their objective opinion about how to proceed. Or are you making the right choices? And if a day passes and you still feel compelled to do the working or the spell, then move carefully with a very direct intention. And you need to be willing to accept any consequences or karmic blowback that you may incur or you may receive because of that negative working that you're doing. Now, when we are full of emotion and we just aren't making good choices, it really is kind of like you're drunk dialing your guides or your deities. The answer may not be what you want. You may be surprised in a good way. And you may be surprised in a bad way. So just be aware. If your emotions are out of control, that's not a good thing. And you may not get the results that you're really intending to have. Now, if you feel that you've been wronged and it is necessary to take action with a spell or casting, make sure you consider your motivations. And again, connect with a peer or an elder in your local pagan community, maybe a therapist, just to make sure that you're going the right direction, because sometimes you do need to have those negative energies used. And just remember that living in a world of fear and retaliation is not very healthy. But you also don't want to be a doormat and allow others to walk on you. So often when we are wronged, we want the world to be right again. And that course correction just feels incomplete without some sort of balance and retribution. Now, there are some paths that do say that you shouldn't embrace that retaliation at all. And so that would be a dark or gray part of magic. And you need to walk in the light and deflect any of those negative feelings or retribution type magic. But, you know, I personally think that a healthy place is somewhere in between. But it's really going to be up to you and the path you're on to find out what's working best for you. Now, having said so much about the potential negatives, I do need to, you know, talk about the positives just a little bit. Just like a coin, there are two sides to the argument. And, you know, you need to be aware that that emotion that you're using to power a spell or casting is going to be for the right reasons. I hope you've thought it through. I hope you've spoken with a peer or your guide or an elder, and that they agree that this is the right choice. Often, if you're doing a big negative casting of some sort, having peer support there to help you with that ritual is a good thing. And if you are going to go into it to use some of that negative energy, make sure you're focusing your emotions to charge the spell, because you'll just have more success than what you might do reactively. Now, if you are new to the path, please make sure you're cautious to what you're doing, because impulse spells or those without thought or care can lead to wild magic and some of those unknown repercussions. They might come back onto you, that negative energy, or they might come back to someone who is close to you. And just a good rule to live by is that for every intended consequence that you're aware of, there's probably going to be at least 10 unintended ones. So that's why I talk about intention so much before you sit down to do a casting or working of any time of any kind. You know, understand your intention, understand your focus, and what could happen. And please, please talk to your guides, talk to your elders, and, you know, make sure that you're on the right path when you're starting to use a lot of that negative energy or negative emotions in your spell work. So it's just a note of caution, folks. But, you know, like I said at the very beginning, you know, emotion is very much a part of any spell work or rituals that we're doing. A lot of our sabbats and esbats, we're celebrating things. There's a lot of joy and happiness and positive energy flowing into that. And anytime we're having one of those rituals, you know, the energy going into it is just definitely going to impact the results. That's just all there is to it. You just need to be kind of aware of what's going on. So that's basically it for the emotions for now, just because I could probably talk about it for another hour or two, but you're going to get bored. So we're going to move on to another topic. I just wanted to kind of touch on some things because I hear folks often wonder how they can implement magic into their day-to-day life without necessarily jumping out of the broom closet. So some of these things don't have to be very big. Like for me personally, if I'm getting ready for the day and even throughout the day, I try to keep my intentions present. I generally carry like a blue lace agate in my pocket that was a gift and a tiger's eye. Now, sometimes those stones are, I use them like warrior stones and I rub them together. But also it's just a way for me to connect with myself and my intentions in the earth. And it's generally pretty grounding. When I pour my coffee into my cup, so I like my coffee a little sweet and creamy. So I'll put a little bit of sugar in the bottom. And if I need a rune for the day, I'll draw a rune in my sugar. Then I'll add the half and half and then the coffee. And so I'm setting my intention right into my coffee cup. You do the same thing with tea even. Now, as a kitchen witch, if myself or my family or someone I know needs something, I might change what I'm planning for dinner or bake something I wasn't planning on baking. That way I can change up my spices or other ingredients just to meet those needs. Now, if throughout the day something or someone causes me some stress or insanity, I try to deal with it the best I can. And then I will go and I will literally wash my hands just to rinse that stress away and move on. Now at home, I might sweep the floors or vacuum and then take the garbage, take it right out to the garbage can. And my intention there is to remove negativity. I'm just like taking the garbage out. Negatives generally belong right in the garbage. And when putting groceries away, I may be thanking the god or the goddess for the bounty and the ability to put groceries away. So just remember, some of the littlest things in life can give you the strongest foundation for your practice. And, you know, just a representative of yourself. Just find the regular in your day-to-day life. So that's just a little bit to me. Now, you might do some things differently. And just a quick list. You maybe go pick some flowers. Pick wildflowers or go buy some. Press them between sheets of wax paper and a heavy book. That's you're preserving things. Go for a walk. Light a candle. Moonbathe. Go lay out in the moon or sunbathe. Lay out in the sun. You can grow your own herbs. Sweep the floor like I did. Take a hot bath. Herbal tea. You know, take a few minutes to show your pets some extra affection. Maybe take up a hobby like beading or knitting, because not only could it give you a way to unwind, but you might have a beautiful project at the end. Volunteer to help clean up trash at a park or alongside the road. Donate to charities. Make things like jams or baked goods. Keep a journal or for regular stuff, or keep a journal for, you know, magical things also, like spells or gardening habits, cooking. Sort of like a book of shadows, but it's more like a book of colors. Read. Or just read read witchy or pagan books, or just go with the fiction just to, you know, give yourself a break. You know, be proud of yourself and your body and you, and splurge on something that makes you happy, whether it's jewelry or an item of clothing. unplug, leave the phone at home, go for a walk, forest, beach, desert, mountains, wherever you're at, go somewhere you haven't gone before, or just stay in bed. So, you know, there's just a huge variety of different ways to embrace the paganism in you every day without saying, hey, I'm a witch. So it looks like, folks, that we are at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go to break here real quick and pay the bills. Now, remember, if you want to share your thoughts or opinions, give us a call at 213-233-3998. Or if you're in the UK, call 442-033-393-2871. This is Paisley Wild, and you're listening to The Spaces Between. Join us in a few when we come back, and we'll see you soon. Hello, my lovelies. This again is Paisley Wild, and we are adventuring in the spaces between. Thank you again for joining me tonight on my spiritual journey. As I mentioned just before the break, the call line is open if you wanted to share your 3 cents. The number is 213-233-3998, or if you're in the UK, please call 442-033-393-2871. So, for the next half hour, I wanted to talk a little bit about the biggest holiday that happens in the pagan community in June in the Northern Hemisphere, and that is Letha, also known as Summer Solstice, and it's on June 21st this year. And so, basically, this is midsummer. June 21st will be the longest day and the shortest night of the entire year. Now, according to our tradition and our calendar wheel, the goddess is now pregnant with the child, and the sun god is at the height of his virility. It's the peak of the solar year, and the sun is at the height of its life-giving power. And so the earth is very much awash with fertility and fulfillment, and it's just a time of joy and celebration. It's a great time to celebrate achievements and just expansiveness. So, at the same time, as we're achieving this celebration time, there is, the whisper, the hints of return to the dark, of course, and the journey to Yule. So as the light reaches its peak, it's also the time when the sunlight begins to wane. So now, after the 21st, the days will begin to grow shorter, the nights longer, as we're just drawn back into the dark to complete the wheel of the year. So right now, the god, known as the Oak King, is very rich in abundance, and he too surrenders his reign to his brother, the twin, the Holly King, and the descent begins. So before we do return to the dark side of the year and acknowledge the turning point of the wheel, we celebrate Letha. So traditionally, people stay up all night on Midsummer's Eve to welcome the new year and to watch the sunrise. Bonfires were often lit on tops of hills, by holy wells, and just places that are held sacred. And it's to honor the fullness of the sun. So fire is definitely a symbolic of the sun. And so at Letha, the bonfire is just representative of the sun at its peak of strength. The chosen wood for a traditional bonfire would be oak, generally, and aromatic herbs like sage or thyme or basil are scattered around the fire, into the fire. And then people dance around the fires and often leap through them because they're crazy and they've had too much mead. Now, blazing herbs from the sacred bonfire are often used to bless animals, and torches are carried the sunwise or to the east around homes and fields, and coals from the midsummer fire might be scattered on fields to help ensure a good harvest. The oak tree is just a big player when it comes to our midsummer festivities. And it's, especially if it's near a well or a fountain, it's decorated with colorful cloths and just very much representative of the Oak King, who has ruled the waxing of the year and absolutely represents strength and courage and endurance. And so the oak has been just very, very significant when it comes to leaf them. Now, the Celtic name for oak, I'm going to mess it up probably, is duir, which means doorway. We're basically crossing the threshold and entering the doorway into the second part of the year, or the waning part. Mistletoe was and still is very revered by the Druids. It's regarded as a very potent when it grows on an oak, which is considered the noblest of trees, basically symbolically growing between the worlds of heaven and earth. Now, even though it's generally associated with Yule and winter solstice, it's often gathered during midsummer when it's considered to be at the height of its power, the strongest it could be. Herbs are often reaching their peak at this time of year, and their fullness of their healing and nurturing potency. So if you're given a gift of herbs as a gift on Midsummer Day, it's very, it's a sign of wealth. Flowers. So the flowers are often reaching their peak right now. Depending on which part of the northern hemisphere you're at, I know that we still have a lot of flowers getting ready to bloom. So, but flowers are often wide open. They're full of color. They smell great. I know that here where I am in Idaho, it's been raining a bit, and the air is just, you walk outside, it's a little humid for Idaho, and it smells great. It just smells like green and growing things, and it's awesome. It's very much a perfume. Bees are now making a lot of honey as we're moving in through summer, and the midsummer full moon is often known as the honeymoon. And like I said, mead is often being made from honey that's now available. And often it's a part of a hand fasting ritual that might be performed at summer solstice. And mead is regarded as the divine solar drink. It's got both magical and life restoring properties. So during summer solstice, drink your mead and celebrate with it and toast a life-giving abundance of the sun. Now, colors that are often associated with Letha or midsummer, well, there's a lot of them. So right now, there's a lot of color out in the world. You can say blue for the sky, green for grass, yellow for sun, or red, orange, and purple to honor all the blooming flowers, or red, blue, green, and yellow to represent the four elements. And whatever you choose to work with during the festival, it's going to matter to you more. And you may not work with the same colors this year for flowers that you did last year. And you may choose different flowers for next year. And that's pretty much A-okay, just whatever is connecting with you. Now, your altar this time of the year is often going to have oak leaves, because oak leaves, again, are very representative of the season and the holiday of Letha, and maybe some herbs, flowers, grasses, anything to represent the abundance that you are generally encountering during the summer. The candles that you might have on your altar are generally going to be in sun colors, orange, yellow, reds. So just remember, it's a shrine to, you know, honor the sun. So maybe you're going to have sunflowers, but you'd be very literal. Now, there's different recipes associated with Letha. Like elderflowers are starting to bloom right now, and they're very medicinal. You could soak them in your champagne to give it a little bit more kick, maybe both medicinal and, champagne's good anyways, or put them in your mead. Mead has always been kind of a vehicle to give someone medicine, because it's very sweet. It hides a lot of things. Elderflowers are very protective, have some great healing properties, and definitely something that's out and about right now. So maybe put elderflowers in your mead. I have a recipe for a couple different things that I will include probably on my YouTube page more. You might want to do a full moon charm to enhance your natural radiance and just to celebrate the beauty of midsummer. That's just a real simple. You might want a glass or a china bowl or a small jug and a white candle. You're going to want a small candle because you want it to burn completely. So put water into the jug, preferably rainwater, fresh water from the tap if it's not a well or a city water. You're going to want to take it outside with the bowl and the candle and put them on the ground. Make sure the candle's in a good holder and just put it at the top of the bowl. Generally about midnight or noon, the 12 o'clock position on a clock face, and pour the water into the center of the bowl and just say, renewing water, shining and bright, weave your charm in my bowl of light. Make sure your moon bowl is in the moonlight so the full moon is reflected into the water, and just let the candle burn down. Again, make sure it's in a safe place so it's not going to cause a fire. And when it's all done, take your bowl and dip your hands in the water and splash the moon water on your face and say, by full moon charm, by full moon light, my inner beauty shine through tonight. Brightest blessings of the goddess shine through me. And then when you've done, and any water left over, just return it to the earth. Personally, I would probably add it to my little baby oak tree Groot, just because I think he needs it. Or you could pour it on a different tree that you might have out in your yard, another oak tree or something. So anyways, that's just a little bit about Letha, and just some ways to celebrate it. For the coming holiday. Next week, we're going to talk more about Yule, which for the Southern Hemisphere is experiencing right now. And now, I personally follow Hecate more. And I kind of got bludgeoned a bit and realized that Kenunos is someone I should probably pay attention to also. Just because he's generally represented by the green man or the oak. And I have little baby Groot is, yeah. So I kind of wanted to start talking about some of the pantheons. And since those are kind of my focus, I figured I'd start with some of the Celtic deities. Now, both Kenunos and Hecate show up in different pantheons and are quite possibly pre everybody else. Hecate is often considered the mother of the gods, and Kenunos is kind of a mystery origination. So I'm learning more about both of them. So I don't know, as we move forward, I may have some change my opinions on them or where their origins are as I learn more. So just where I'm starting now. We're going to go into other deities and pantheons later, but we got to start somewhere, right? So probably the most common goddess that is associated with Celtic mythology is the Morrigan. Now, she's considered the goddess of war. Her name is loosely translated to the Great Queen or Phantom Queen or even Queen of Demons. She was considered to basically be associated with war and the crow or raven, and thought to maybe hover or be around them, a battlefield, and could influence or predict the outcome of a battle. She's appeared to Dagda on the Feast of Samhain and has promised to aid him in upcoming battles. So Dagda was victorious in previous battles and probably will be again. So, you know, the manifestation of the crow as the Morrigan is represented throughout Celtic mythology. Now, I did not go through and phonetically sound out a lot of the names because I just kind of ran out of time tonight. But some of these names are, wow. If I'm messing them up, I apologize very much. Anyways, excuse me. The next one I wanted to talk about is Angus, the god of love and youth. So he's generally associated with the valley of the River Boyne. So his backstory is that he's searched all of Ireland for a beautiful maiden and eventually found Care, who was with 150 other maidens destined to turn into swans on November 1st, which is the Feast of Samhain. And Angus transformed himself into a swan so he could be reunited with Care, who followed him back to his place on the River Boyne, which is now modern-day New Grange. Danu is considered the matriarch of power, and she's associated with the Tuatha De Danann. I probably just screwed that one up. Sorry, people. Basically, it's loosely translated to mean the goddess, people of the goddess Danu. Now, some do consider that Dagda is her father, which brings us to Dagda, who is the good god. He's portrayed as having superhuman strength and appetites, and he's often paired with the goddess Morrigan, and is the father of Bridget and Angus. His attributes are generally with a large club, which had a duality of power, killing people and bringing them back to life. He also had a set of two pigs. One was always roasting and one growing, and he used a harp to summon the different seasons, and then also a cauldron, which provided endless sources of food. So just a busy, busy guy. The next one is Cuculain, I think, or the Hound of Ulster. So he was originally named Setanta, but he gained his other name after killing the guard dog of Cuculain the Smith. So he's remembered as a kind of a tough guy, and he had lots of adventures, and he thought that he could outlive his mortality. So when the goddess Morrigan offered him mortality, he rejected her, actually, which was an oops, because he felt it wasn't a gift that should be bestowed upon him. So in his next battle, he actually died. And there was a vision of him with the crow, or the representation of the Morrigan, on his shoulder. Bridget is the fire of inspiration, hearth, and forge. So she's currently remembered in Christianity as Saint Bridget, but she does have other associations. She's a threefold goddess, with her powers being fire of inspiration, fire of hearth, and fire of the forge. And her February is generally around February 1st, which is Imlach, where she ushers in springtime. So very much associated with fire. So Canunos is the horned one. He's the horned god, very connected to fertility, both in animals, according to some interpretations. He's depicted consistently as having the antlers of a stag. And there's been imagery of him found in various places, Paleolithic cave paintings, in Denmark, and just he's shows up kind of everywhere. So he's the quiet god, I think. But definitely he's represented as having antlers, and there's a torque involved and some other things. So we'll get into that just a bit more down the road. Arawan, the god of the underworld and of the dead. So his most famous tale involves him switching places with Quill for a year and a day to challenge someone, Hafgen, who is his rival for ownership of the underworld. And while they switched, Quill defeated Hafgen and was rewarded with pigs. So, you know how the wealth is measured differently throughout the different nations of the world. Here in the U.S., it's with money. In some tribal areas in the third world countries, it's the number of goats or cows. Apparently, pigs are really big in the Celtic mythology. So, he who owns the most pigs wins. Abandonus, who's the defender of waters. There's not much is known about him, other than he was just the guardian of the waters. And then the Tuatha De Danann is, again, just a group of folks that means the children of the goddess Danu. And even though they felt that they were her children, she was not actually their mother. It's just supposedly a group of people that have perfected their use of magic and became almost gods, or some became gods and goddesses. So You know, they're very much a part of the Celtic traditions. Let's see, were there any others? So, you know, there's a lot of different names associated with the different gods and goddesses, regardless of which pantheon they're in. For instance, Danu was known as Anna, Anu, Dana, Danu, and Anan. So it really varied with the different tribes, different communities within Ireland. So the interpretation was a little bit different, even though as a society they had just a real firm understanding of who she was. Dagda had just mostly one name, the Dagda or An Dagda, or the good god. Angus had a couple different ways you could spell it. Mostly they were all Angus or Bjorn, Bon, I should say. So, you know, that's when you're doing your research and you're doing your study, you're going to want to write down different things, because one book or transcript or article might refer to a god or goddess using one name, and another one will use another name, even though they're talking about the same person in the pantheon. So just do your research, make notes, and you want to compare the different names to make sure you're not duplicating one in your research, or you're not missing one, like Lu, Lord Lu. He was Lu, the long arm. He was generally revered as a sun god. He is considered very handsome and just a major warrior. And he used a sling and a spear and a shield, so, and just a really, really major warrior. So, and also he had power with thunderstorms, ravens, lynxes, and he was just a really major god. Now, when the Romans came to the British Isles, they did adopt a lot of the Celtic gods and goddesses and some of their characteristics into their own pantheon, just because they wanted that transition or adoption of the Roman traditions into the Celtic world also. So just some of the different pantheons are kind of a mishmash, and that's why there's some overlap, I think, with some of them, and why there's a lot of characteristics that happen in the different pantheons that are reciprocated or reflected in other pantheons. And as we talk about them more, you'll see it more. Another god that we didn't mention is Bel or Belinus. He was also considered a sun god. He was known by the Fair and Shining One. He was associated with the horse and the wheel, even. So his portrayal is generally he's in a shining gold chariot being pulled by shiny gold horses, just like some other Greek deities we know about. So, you know, it's, again, it's that overlap in the different deities. And we'll talk about them more later, obviously. So Canunos, as I mentioned earlier, is someone that I feel like I need to pay more attention to myself, just because he is associated with the oak tree. He's also considered the green man, or has been known to be associated with that. So, and he's portrayed in different traditions with different names, of course. Like some of his characteristics are associated with Jupiter or Vulcan. So it's just, again, some of its interpretation, different deity versions, I guess, will call to you differently. That's why there's different traditions. But yeah, they're very much the oak. He's the oak king. And he's associated with animals and forests. And they say fertility and and wealth, just because some of the depictions of him are showed as him being very well endowed. That could just be a representation showing that he's masculine rather than feminine. A lot of the Paleolithic drawings and carvings aren't very clear on that one. So that's open to interpretation when it comes to fertility. And even the wealth is open to some interpretation also, because there's some questioning. Is it a bag of coins that he has in most of his depictions, or is it a bag of rice or grains, which is more for, you know, harvest and growing things? So there is just a bit of interpretation there also. But again, it tells you, do your research, do your studying. A lot of the world of paganism and witchcraft is very much intuitive and personal. And, you know, different things are going to mean different things to different people. Just like not everybody's going to define the color blue with quite the same shade of blue. And we just need to, one, don't shut your mind to other interpretations of the same deity. Because each person is going to have a slightly different relationship with whatever tradition they're on. So if that's part of the reason why I'm eclectic, I feel I can interpret things to meet my needs rather than being just on a specific path. But then that's my choice. So anyways, that's just me. It looks like we are done for the night. Holy cow, this hour went by fast. So thank you for joining me. If you do have thoughts or ideas for future shows, make sure you email me at wildpaisley@gmail.com, and that's wild with an E. And you can join me here next week on Friday, here on Truth Frequency Radio, iHeartRadio.